Please be aware that this podcast has reference to drug and alcohol use and paraphernalia and may not be appropriate for some people in early recovery. Hello everyone, my name is Dr. Mahjubeen Islam.
And I am Dr. Ketley Daniels.
And we want to thank you for listening to our Treat Addiction podcast. The information in this podcast cannot replace your seeking a treatment provider, which you can easily do at SAMHSA's national helpline at findtreatment.gov or 1-800-622-4357. You know what, Ketley? I think that marijuana the monster is really jinxed.
What do you mean by that?
Well, if you remember, we were supposed to do that episode on marijuana before the magic mushrooms episode. And then we decided that because microdosing was becoming such a rage, we would do the magic mushrooms episode. And then the Friends actor Matthew Perry died of ketamine poisoning. So we decided, actually you decided, to do two episodes on ketamine. So I don't know what the future holds for marijuana, if it's ever going to happen.
I see what you're saying now. But I think it's true that we should take a moment and devote a couple of episodes to this subject, just so to be current and relevant.
So you followed the story pretty closely when it happened. Do you want to tell us about it?
Well, from what I understand, having watched the news, Matthew Langford Perry was an American actor, also Canadian, and he gained international fame for starring as Chandler Bing on the NBC television sitcom Friends, and I used to enjoy watching it, by the way. Mm. Perry also appeared on Ally McBeal and received Primetime Emmy Award nomination for his performances in The West Wing and The Ron Clark Story.
Yeah, it was such a shock for the country. It reminded me of the OxyContin overdose of Prince and the propofol fiasco of Michael Jackson.
True. And while these celebrity deaths bring attention to addiction to various substances, or even in the case of Robin Williams, major depression, which, you know, caused his death by suicide, these tragedies also occur daily to everyday people.
Yeah, they really do. And what I feel so bad about is that almost uniformly, the deaths were entirely preventable.
Yes. Apparently, Matthew Perry died from acute effects of ketamine. He had been undergoing ketamine infusion therapy to treat his depression.
He was, but was he not injected by a physician on the day of his death?
Unfortunately, according to the media, he was injected multiple times the day of his death. And an autopsy showed the amount of ketamine in his system had reached the level used for general anesthesia. Oh
my goodness.
Mm-hmm. It appears he was also receiving infusion therapy for depression.
And it so, you know, reminded me of what happened with Michael Jackson, who was using propofol, which is a strong sedative and actually an anesthetic agent. And Dr. Conrad Murray injected Michael Jackson with it multiple times. And when he was found unresponsive, this part I can't wrap my mind around. He tried to do CPR on him on a bed, on a springy mattress, Instead of laying him on the floor.
Wow. You know, in this case, this particular physician, Dr. Salvador Placencia, also known as Dr. P, he was charged with the death of Matthew Perry, and he actually surrendered his license to prescribe controlled substances, although pleaded not guilty to any role in Perry's death. And even though authorities say that Dr. P injected Perry multiple times in a park, of all places, in a park a few hours before his death, he's still claiming no culpability. Apparently, at one point, he saw Perry freeze up and his blood pressure spiked. But despite that, he continued injecting him with the ketamine.
It's really like a bad movie, it seems, because there was that ketamine queen person also, yeah?
Yeah, that was interesting when I saw on the news that she was called the ketamine queen and her name was Jasmine Sanga. Perry, his live-in assistant, in addition to this woman, provided all of this ketamine to Perry. And he was actually injected 27 times before his death.
Good Lord.
Incredible. Incredible. And authorities found 80 vials of ketamine, thousands of methamphetamine pills, and lots of cocaine and Xanax in this queen's house.
Yeah, well-deserved name. Perry even wrote a memoir about his addiction to ketamine and how it started with his treatment for depression.
What is so shattering is that Perry was found in his Pacific Palisades mansion, floating face down, having passed out from his injections of ketamine.
And that reminded me of the circumstances of Whitney Houston's death, in which she also was found face down in the bathtub. The autopsy showed that the death was due to cocaine and heart disease causing accidental drowning, but then toxicology found Xanax, Flexeril, marijuana, and Benadryl in her system. But surprisingly, these were not ruled as contributing to her death, which is so counterintuitive. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, you have cocaine and then you have all of these other substances, right. And then she dropped. So,
I mean, it's very similar to Matthew Perry.
Yes.
And with him, there was a broad underground drug network that was apparently supplying numerous people with various medications, including the ketamine. Also, the closely involved ones were two licensed physicians, including to this ketamine queen and a living assistant.
And apparently this ketamine queen woman, supplied Matthew Perry with 55 vials of ketamine for $11,000.
Imagine that. It was about the money. And you know, this is the whole industry. It's about the money. And they also found a text in Dr. P's phone that said, you know, I wonder how much this moron will pay.
And that just tells you the greed and how mm-hmm. sickening it is. And as soon as the news of Perry's death became public, the ketamine queen told her broker to delete all text messages. And apparently, this Dr. P, the Dr. Placencia, was falsifying medical records to make it look that he was doing something legitimate.
You know, it always boggles my mind. I wonder how, do you not think you're ever going to get caught? Do you not think that eventually this will catch up with you?
This is really amazing. It's mind-boggling.
I guess not. Maybe you can share the exact cause of his death, Perry's death.
Cause of the death is written as acute effects of ketamine. And the contributing factors are written as drowning, coronary artery disease, and buprenorphine effects, which is a type of opioid.
Yeah, and we talked about that in one of our earlier sessions. It appears that he was receiving ketamine both by infusion and also he was taking it by mouth because they found ketamine in his stomach as well.
And you know, Ketley, the levels are so mind-boggling because Matthew Perry's level of the ketamine was 3,271 to 3,540 nanograms per milliliter. And in general anesthesia, the levels are supposed to be 1,000 to 6,000. So basically, he was in the anesthetic dose range of mm-hmm. ketamine.
And curious, though, because according to the experts, it was not the ketamine itself that killed him, but rather it created the circumstances by which he died, which is the drowning.
Yeah, which is like Whitney Houston. Mm-hmm. He was also very open about his addiction, and a few months before his death said that if there was one thing, and this is so kind of like prophetic and kind of sad, if there was one thing he wanted to be known for would be that he wanted to help people with addiction.
Wow. It is sad when you think about it. And in the memoir he wrote, Friends, Lovers, and the Big Terrible Thing, he was very open about the lifelong struggle he has had with addiction, and that he actually went and sought treatment 15 times.
15 times is not small. And spent so much money.
So much money.
So I think we should talk a little bit about the ketamine. It appears that it is available in the market and is used not just for the treatment of depression, but also as a club drug. Because it's made it to the market, it is unregulated, like we talked about in the previous episode mm-hmm. About other drugs that are unregulated, like magic mushrooms, and it's available from several clinics, but there's really no oversight on them. And Matthew Perry's case has turned a spotlight on loose prescribing practices around ketamine, which is actually a hallucinogen. It has been approved for decades as a drug for anesthesia, and that's how we had learned about it, you know, in mm-hmm. medical school. It has a long history as a party drug, and in recent years, it has been studied as a possible treatment for depression, post-traumatic stress disorder, and chronic pain. Mm-hmm.
Ketamine is classified as a Schedule 3 drug by the U.S. Drug Enforcement Agency, which means it has low to moderate potential for physical or psychological dependence. Sometimes people think because low to moderate means it's on the low end. It's not. it is. It is a problem. Scheduling a drug puts limits on how often a patient can refill their prescription without having enough oversight by a physician and how it is stored and managed.
But, you know, market economy is just such a problem. People still find a way to misuse the drug, especially compounded drugs, which are custom mixed by individual pharmacies and diverted from medical settings. So when the FDA approves a drug, it allows doctors freedom to prescribe it for uses beyond what it is studied to do. And, you know, we do this every day. Mm-hmm. We do, we prescribe medications for off-label uses for several prescription drugs. But as it appears that the off-label prescriptions are a minority for that medication.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But, you know, also I want our audience to hear that when we talk about off-label uses, it is not a bad thing because in medicine, there's a lot of serendipity. When we treat patients with product X, we find that it also helps other issues. So
Correct. That's
a good thing. But for this particular one, not so much because the DEA, they don't really know exactly how many people are getting this drug. What doses that are being used, what problems are consequences of this drug. And more regulation of medical ketamine is needed, but there are trade-offs to having the administration get involved in limiting its use because we also need it for people for anesthesia and other reasons.
So estimates from the federal government's National Survey on Drug Use and Health suggest that ketamine use is still relatively rare. In 2023, only about 2% of adults said that they had taken the drug at some point in their life. But then again, you have another company called Epic Research, which did a 2023 survey and found that ketamine prescription rates in the U.S. increased more than 500%.
That's incredible. Between
2017 and 2022, with the lion's share of prescriptions written to treat pain.
And again, similar to the opioids.
Right.
Treating pain is a good thing, but it has to be managed.
Yeah,
has
regulated.
To be oversight, regulated.
Yes, correct. Yes.
An increasing number of in-person ketamine clinics have opened in the U.S., marketing IV infusions, injections, and even some oral forms of ketamine like lozenges or some other sublingual products. Market research, Grandview Research estimates that the market for ketamine clinics had reached $3.4 billion in 2023.
Billion with a B.
Billion with a B. I cannot count that far. And projects that it will continue to grow about 10% a year through 2030.
And you know, this intervention of all things money in our lives reminds me of the evil genius of the Sackler family that created and marketed OxyContin as though it was entirely harmless, ending up to create the opioid epidemic.
Yeah. And in our culture, it's all about the bottom line, the money.
The money.
It's all about the money.
Mm-hmm.
And with the marijuana lobbying, promoting marijuana as though it is entirely harmless as well, the same thing.
Same thing.
And I remember I was one of those interviewed by the APA years ago about whether or not we should legalize, you know, cannabis. And my recommendation was no. I said, give it time. You will see the problems in this community as a result. And it's happening now in real time. We're watching it.
Yeah.
But there's absolutely so much pressure from the lobbying. Yeah.
And the intervention of the internet has really created a lot of issues because online prescribing of ketamine accounts for almost half the market.
Wow.
And in October, the FDA warned about growing use of compounded forms of the drug, including lozenges. And dangers highlighted by the agency include psychiatric events, increased blood pressure, and respiratory depression.
You know, it reminded me of an individual that I was treating for depression using the esketamine, the Spravato. And he eventually ended treatment because he wasn't sure how much benefit he was still getting. So he found an online pharmacy that they were with him on a Zoom call to monitor him as he was using this product by himself in his bedroom.
Oh, my Lord.
That's how he was doing it. And apparently clinics often don't have to have a doctor to evaluate the patients. And they give whatever dose of ketamine they want, and the average person will accept that. And they do not monitor the patient's progress, and patients are usually expected to pay cash for each treatment. And it's like the Wild Wild West. Whatever goes, people will do whatever. And the unsuspecting patient, often, even when you give them feedback, they are still willing to try this new thing, hoping this is the answer for them. They're still willing to try it.
Exactly. And the funny part is that because esketamine is approved by the FDA, there are strict regulations around the prescription of esketamine. But ketamine, no. So, but we'll talk more about ketamine and esketamine in our next episode about the treatment of depression.
It's so true, because I'm thinking there's a whole REMS. It's a mitigation program that's in place with prescribing esketamine. But yet they can go online with person X or Y and get whatever they want at whatever dose they want without any oversight.
And REMS is a risk evaluation and mitigation strategy.
Correct.
And people, it's really interesting that you bring that up, because I ask my patients that, are you keeping your Suboxone locked? And they say, no, it's in my bag. And then I tell them that if a child gets a hold of it, or someone who is opioid naive, they'll die.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, nobody ever told me that.
Oh, so, yeah, it's true. And going back to Perry's case, the actor was using ketamine to ease depression, according to the autopsy report, but there were suggestions that he had developed a growing need for the drug. And so when they talk about it being low tolerance, there is this thing that tells you that there is a problem right there.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm.
In the news release on the changes brought in his death, the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Central District of California said that doctors said the drug that they were given to Perry, despite being informed at least on a weekly basis early that his ketamine addiction was spiraling, he was still being given this product,
yes,
even though they knew what was happening.
And apparently ketamine isn't physically addicting the way an opioid drug can be, because with an opioid or any other drug, if you stop it suddenly, you go through physical symptoms of withdrawal. People who use ketamine regularly and then stop don't typically apparently have withdrawal symptoms per se. And they say you live in what they call K-lands or ketamine lands, and coming back to reality might be unpleasant, but you're not going to go through a physical withdrawal. I'm so freaked out about that. I mean, like, I don't know how people would take that kind of risk. But that's why some people call it psychologically addicting.
You know, I think I mentioned last time we talked about the psychedelics. I can't even imagine taking a product that's going to have me spinning and seeing things. I don't care how pretty those things are, but I'm seeing something that's not real, and it can easily become scary. No, but then that's, we're not addicted to substances.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And just like Matthew Perry, the cause of death was not the ketamine directly as much as it was the conditions whereby he drowned. And similarly, a person decide to use ketamine and has no idea about the amount that they're using, and they decide to cook or do something with fire in the house and can burn down the whole house, or they'll drive and have accidents. Many things can happen. And this is not just about ketamine. We're talking about any other substances, you know, whether it's alcohol and you forget that your inhibition is impaired now and you'll make bad decisions.
Mm-hmm.
No, they don't consider the after effect.
And in alcohol and opioids, there are, obviously there's euphoria,
mm-hmm,
but here you're dealing with a hallucinogen.
A hallucinogen.
So you are basically, the hallucination can be completely out of control.
Right.
And there's complete distortion as far as reality is concerned.
Right.
So this is, the danger is a whole lot more.
Yeah.
So we will be doing another episode for the treatment-resistant depression. But maybe you can do a quick encapsulation or some take-home points for this episode.
I don't know. I had an image that just popped into my mind with Nancy Reagan. Just say no. Don't do it. Don't do it. You know, because like anything else, any illicit substance, you're not quite sure what you're getting, how much you're getting,
right,
and what's it combined with. You are taking a very big risk, and that risk can be fatal.
Or cause serious bodily or other harm.
Yeah.
To, you know, yourself, yeah, and other people. So we really hope you enjoyed this episode. Our next episode will deal with the use of ketamine and esketamine for the treatment of depression. And we really hope you will join us. I'm your host and producer, Dr. Mahjabeen Islam.
And I am Dr. Ketley Daniels.
And our executive producer is the very talented Chris Pfeiffer. Do share this podcast with friends and family, for it is only through education that our society can be helped and we can stem the destruction that drug use causes. Just go to wgte.org/treataddiction or wherever you stream your podcasts. And with the challenges of life, do remember, patience in difficult times and gratitude always. See you soon.
WGTE. Voices around us.
WGTE is supported in part by the American Rescue Plan Act funds, allocated by the City of Toledo and the Lucas County Commissioners, and administered by the Arts Commission.